G7 leaders promised to strengthen Ukraine's air defenses amid continued Russian attacks. Strikes called by Britain's largest rail union paralyze the transport network in cold winter days. The U.S., South Korea, and Japan pledging to keep all options open against North Korea, including counterstrikes. This is news from Tehran with me, your host, Behruz Najafi. It's good to have you with us. The group of seven major economies promising to keep supporting Ukraine by pumping up more weaponry to that country. The G7 members say that they will shore up Ukraine's air defenses and continue to help it meet its urgent requirements for military equipment. The bloc includes Britain and the U.S. that have been the biggest providers of military aid to Ukraine since the beginning of the war with Russia in February. The G7 made the pledge after Ukrainian President Zelensky appealed for more military assistance to counter Russia.
Ukraine needs modern tanks. I ask you to make this defensive weapon to us. It is possible to do it now. Ukraine needs stable, supportive artillery with howitzers and rockets in order to prevent escalation from the Russian side. We need more response artillery and long-range rockets. The more effective we are with these weapons, the shorter the Russian aggression will be.
Zelensky also called on the G7 to provide his country with an additional 2 billion cubic meters of natural gas to help it cope with energy shortages. Ukrainians are struggling to keep warm during winter and face power cuts amid Russian air raids on critical infrastructure. Our correspondent in Moscow, John Amiter, early joined us with his take on the West's military assistance to Kyiv.
NATO countries seem reticent to give Ukraine some of their most advanced weaponry. Why is that? First of all, they're concerned that some of this technology may well fall into the Russians' hands. Of course, there was the famous incident some years ago when the Iranians shot down an American drone and then reverse-engineered it. Drones, of course, very important in this conflict, and the Americans not giving their most advanced drones, which could have a huge effect on the battlefield, to the Ukrainians for this very reason. There's also a fear that of whether the most advanced NATO anti-air defense, for example, would be able to shoot down the most advanced Russian missiles. Russia has some of the most advanced hypersonic missiles in the world. And so there's questions about just how effective even the most advanced NATO air defense would be against Russian missiles. And of course, it's not a good look trying to sell these weapons around the world when on a live conflict zone. You're seeing they're not maybe as successful as you would hope. But at the moment, Ukraine also asking NATO for more long-range missiles. And that would be a major escalation from NATO if they were to do that. If, for example, Ukraine was able to fire a missile at Moscow, I spoke to a Russian government official yesterday who warned that Russia has a huge military capability they haven't used yet.
In the meantime, a Ukrainian minister says the world should reconsider the issue of nuclear safety amid its claims that Russia is targeting Europe's largest nuclear power plant located in Ukraine.
It changed everything. I mean, and I think that that's a very important issue, that all the world should rethink what is nuclear safety now and how we could respond. We just cannot look at this, what is happening, and say, yes, it's bad, or look what is happening. So we need to respond to this. And the response could be, first, we should do something with the Russians, that's for sure. I mean, because that's, they break everything that was built before.
The minister also warned that Russian missiles with a range of 2,000 kilometers are a threat, as they could reach any nuclear reactor in Europe. Ukraine accuses Russia of targeting the Zaporizhia power plant, which has been under the control of Russian forces since March. Kyiv says the site has cut off Ukraine's energy grid several times due to Russian shelling. The Kremlin denies the allegation, saying it's Ukraine that has been committing nuclear terrorism by launching attacks on the plant. The UN nuclear watchdog has also raised the alarm over the safety of the plant. Staying with Europe, thousands of rail workers are on strike across the UK amid backlash over economic pressure across different sectors. Britain's largest rail union, RMT, is calling the industrial action. Picket lines appeared at major stations to kick off a month of action, with people advised only to travel if essential. The action is expected to trigger massive transport disruption during the Christmas travel peak. Britain has been witnessing back-to-back strikes over the past months. Those include work stoppage by postal workers and border officers. The UK is facing a rising inflation and surging energy prices. It came on the heels of Western sanctions on Russia for the war in Ukraine. A Greek MEP, Eva Kaili, is stripped of her title as Vice President of the European Parliament after being charged with corruption and money laundering by Belgian police. Qatar denies claims of attempting to influence economic and political decisions in the EU by bribing politicians, officials, and NGOs. From Brussels, Jerome Hughes has the story.
Just a few weeks ago, on the 21st of November, Greek MEP Eva Kaili gave a robust speech in the European Parliament praising Qatar. The former TV presenter also rounded on her fellow lawmakers for criticising the Qatari government.
Still some here are calling to discriminate them. They bully them and they accuse everyone that talks to them or engages of corruption. But still, they take their gas.
Qatar denies any involvement, but Kaili has now been charged by Belgian police as part of a corruption investigation. They raided 16 homes in Brussels on Friday and seized €600,000 in cash, along with computers and phones. Trade union boss Luca Vicentini and former MEP Antonio Panzeri have also been questioned. Greek authorities have frozen all of Eva Kaili's assets and those of her family.
There will always be some for whom a bag of cash is always worth the risk. And what is essential is that these people understand that they will get caught.
Some who have worked inside the European Parliament are not surprised by the scandal.
I think that the real problem here that we need to address is the fact that the wrongdoings of MEPs, not just MEPs, but also the very senior staff members in there, are actually covered up by the administration.
Questions are now being asked about positive statements made towards Qatar by European Commissioner Margarita Skinners.
This is not the way to organise a press conference here.
I'm going to respond to our questions.
Journalists had to force a response during a Monday press conference.
We are at the status quo, but indeed, if any kind of new information occurs, we will have to act and react to that.
Apart from being extremely serious, analysts say this is very embarrassing for EU authorities, as they always present the bloc as being whiter than white, pointing the finger at alleged corruption around the world. It's understood officials here in the EU are bracing themselves. Sources tell us there will be further revelations in the coming days. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Now, on the other side of the planet, Venezuela is saying it will fully reopen its land border with Colombia within weeks after a thaw in ties between the two neighbors.
I can announce that we will be completely opening the entire western border of Venezuela with Colombia for the passage of vehicles.
Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro underlined that Caracas is committed to the pledges it's made during the recent talks with Bogota. The border between the two countries partially reopened in October after 7 years of closure. Diplomatic ties between the two broke off in 2019 after former Colombian government questioned Maduro's election victory. Colombia's new president, Gustavo Petro, however, has taken steps to mend ties with Caracas since taking office in June. The two neighbors formally re-established diplomatic relations in August. The U.S., Japan, and South Korea are going to impose more sanctions on North Korea to counter what they are calling Pyongyang's nuclear threat.
Based on the robust ROK-U.S. alliance and the trilateral security cooperation, we will strengthen our deterrence against North Korea's nuclear and missile threat. We will coordinate sanctions and close gaps in the international sanctions regime.
The official also accused Pyongyang of becoming more aggressive and blatant in its threats. He made a comment in a meeting with his U.S. and Japanese counterparts in Jakarta. The U.S. representative also described North Korea's behavior as one of the most serious security challenges to the region and beyond. The Japanese envoy said that the trio would examine all options, including counter-strike capabilities. The sanctions followed tests of an intercontinental ballistic missile by North Korea last month. Pyongyang has fired over 60 missiles, including 8 ICBMs this year, in response to U.S. hostilities. The North says that this missile program is for self-defense. Hamas resistance movement says the Palestinians will never allow Israel to implement its malicious schemes for Al-Quds and the Al-Aqsa Mosque in particular. The head of Hamas's political bureau says the issue of the Al-Quds will remain a top priority for the movement and Palestinian people everywhere. Ismail Haniyeh was speaking on the occasion of Hamas's 35th anniversary. The top official stressed that the movement has a clear and unwavering strategy toward a Palestinian cause and the struggle against the Israeli settler and colonial project. He said Hamas has long been committed to the unity of the Palestinian people at home and abroad in the face of Israeli occupation and its plots. Haniyeh also explained that Hamas has adopted a strategy of establishing balanced ties with all Arab and Muslim nations with a focus on the Palestine cause. The United States has acknowledged pressing the UN not to impose sanctions on companies doing business in illegal Israeli settlements in the occupied West Bank. Palestinians have time and again denounced Tel Aviv's expansionist plans and say that such policies are the result of Washington's unwavering support.
The United States has revealed it was pressing the United Nations not to update a blacklist of companies doing business in illegal Israeli settlements within the occupied West Bank. That's despite Washington's calls on its ally to stop expansion in occupied Palestinian territory. State Department spokesperson Vedant Patel stated that the United States will oppose any work to update the UN blacklist and has conveyed its concern directly with the Office of the High Commissioner. In February 2020, the Office of the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights published a list of companies operating in Israeli settlements. The list comprises 112 companies, including Israeli and American ones. The initial publication, which listed U.S. companies including Airbnb, Expedia, and TripAdvisor, was denounced by then-administration of Donald Trump, which had reversed long-standing U.S. opposition to settlements in the West Bank. The statement comes just days after the U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken claimed that the Biden administration would oppose the Israeli settlement expansion and any bid to annex the West Bank. Since 1967, the Israeli occupation has established more than 230 settlements in the West Bank and Al-Quds, with over 500,000 settlers living in them to date. Despite the UN Security Council condemning the building of settlements, which under international law are all illegal, the Israelis continue expanding the annexation of more Palestinian land until today, with no prospect of stopping in the future.
The Biden administration's move to pressure the UN against blacklisting businesses that operate in the occupied Palestinian lands shows how pretentious Washington's attempts to oppose Israel's illegal settlements are. Palestinians have repeatedly stated that Washington's support emboldens Tel Aviv to expand its settlement activity.
Palestine has slammed the U.S. move to pressure the United Nations not to update its list of companies operating in Israel settlements in the occupied Palestinian territories. Palestinian Foreign Minister Riyad al-Maliki told Voice of Palestine that the Palestinian leadership rejects any U.S. pressure on the UN and its operating institutions. He added that his ministry is working to arrange a meeting with the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Volker Turk. His remark came after U.S. State Department announced that Washington continues to oppose any action to update the list and has raised concerns directly with the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights. Emboldened by Washington's all-out support, Israel's illegal settlement activities surged under former Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu during Trump's administration. The construction activities are in defiance of United Nations Security Council Resolution 2334, which pronounced settlements in the West Bank and East Al-Quds a flagrant violation under international law. In a speech on Sunday, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said that Washington would judge Benjamin Netanyahu's incoming regime by actions and not personalities. Controversial Israeli politician Netanyahu is likely to return to power after striking a coalition deal with the extreme right outfits, including religious Zionism, which could be put in charge of constructing illegal settlements and the Tel Aviv regime's land grab policies in the occupied Palestinian territories. Meanwhile, the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has called on the international community to criminalize Israeli violations against Palestinians and to hold the occupying regime accountable for its crimes. The movement has stressed that Israeli crimes constitute a flagrant violation of the principles of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and the international law, reaffirming its commitment to the legitimate Palestinian rights. Hamas has also called on the United Nations and the international community to put an end to Israeli crimes in the occupied cities of Al-Quds and the West Bank, end the unjust blockade imposed on the Gaza Strip, and enable the Palestinians to defend themselves with all means possible until ending the occupation and establishing an independent Palestinian state with Al-Quds as its capital. Since the start of 2022, Israeli troops have killed more than 210 Palestinians, including more than 50 children, in the occupied West Bank and East Al-Quds, as well as the besieged Gaza Strip.
That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight. Several Moroccan players have been seen carrying the Palestinian flag after victories. By displaying the Palestine flag at the height of celebrating a career highlight with fans, the Moroccan team has centered the Palestine issue in the collective hearts and minds of people around the world. Morocco's football team came to the World Cup to represent something bigger than football. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The website of Middle East Eye wrote in this regard, after 10-2 hours, Morocco defeated Spain in a penalty shootout recently to seal their historic passage to the World Cup quarterfinals. The Atlas Lions have become the first Arab nation to ever reach this stage of tournament and only the fourth African team, after Cameroon in 1990, Senegal in 2002, and Ghana in 2010. This tournament was always going to be remembered as the groundbreaking first World Cup to be held in West Asia region, but now it has the added distinction of an Arab nation achieving unprecedented sporting success. Morocco's progress to the last eight of this tournament has been far from easy. The last time they won a game at a World Cup was 24 years ago in Saint-Étienne, France, when they beat Scotland 3-0. This time around, they have already defeated two teams positioned higher than them in the FIFA rankings, Belgium ranked 2nd and Spain 7th. Morocco ranked 22nd also came away with a draw against fellow quarterfinalist Croatia 12th. The euphoria that greeted Morocco's advancement reverberated far and wide across the region, from Agadir to Amman. Alongside colorful celebrations in Amsterdam, Brussels, London, and Paris. There is much to admire about this team and manager Walid Regragui that goes beyond their success in the field. This shared pride in Morocco's achievement across the West Asia, North Africa region, and beyond should thus come as no surprise. Several Moroccan players have been seen carrying the Palestinian flag after victories, while fans in the stadia have also raised flags in solidarity with Palestinians. The symbolism of footballers doing so on the pitch after a game is hugely significant. By displaying the Palestine flag at the height of celebrating a career highlight with fans, the Moroccan team has centered the Palestine issue in the collective hearts and minds of people around the world. As Riaz Mansour, Palestine ambassador and permanent observer to the United Nations, said, "The winner of this World Cup is already known. It is Palestine." The fact that the North African team has come to represent something bigger than football and is prepared to stand by these convictions has elevated its popularity and status outside of Morocco. In addition, visible and sincere displays of Islamic worship have endeared the team to Muslims around the world. From players cupping their hands in pre-game supplication to post-goal celebrations where players have prostrated in thanks to Quran recitation prior to the penalty shootout against Spain. After years of rising intolerance and discrimination against Muslims, particularly in the West, this confident and resolute show of faith and identity on a global stage has been incredibly heartwarming and compelling. Another factor that has endeared this Moroccan team to fans across the Arab and Muslim world has been the touching scenes involving their families. At the instruction of Regragui and Morocco's Football Federation, family members of the squad were treated to an all-inclusive trip to Qatar and have been staying at the team's base in Doha's West Bay area. We've seen endearing scenes of a star player, Ashraf Hakimi, embracing his mother after the Belgium and Spain games and similar scenes between Raghuri and his own mother. These scenes have particularly resonated across the Arab and Muslim world. But the sacrifice of parents for the sake of their children cuts across nationality, race, and religion. Hakimi has previously spoken about his parents' role in his success, saying, "My mother cleaned the houses and my father was a street vendor. We come from a modest family that struggled to earn a living. Today, I fight every day for them. They sacrifice themselves for me." On the pitch, there is also much to like about this team. They have the best defense out of the remaining teams, conceding only one goal throughout this World Cup. Their resilience in defense is matched by the individual brilliance of some of their stars. 14 of their 26 players were born outside the country, the highest proportion for any team in Qatar. This has proven to be a strength, as the Atlas Lions have combined the creativity and flair of Arab football with the tactical competitiveness of the European game. It has also increased their reliability for fans in West Asia, North Africa region. It's worth noting that this is by the design and not a happy accident. In 2014, a campaign called Bring Back Talents Belonging to the Soil was launched by the Moroccan Football Federation to tap into the prospects emerging out of the approximately 4 million strong community. The culmination of these efforts was seen as a player born in the suburbs of Madrid confidently dinked in a penalty to send his country of birth crashing out of the tournament. Amid all of this, it is easy to forget that Raghuri is still within the first 100 days of his tenure as head coach. In guiding his team through to the quarterfinals of the World Cup, he has created his own piece of history, becoming the first African manager to guide an African nation to this stage of a World Cup. Morocco has now a date with destiny. Meanwhile, the website of Crescent International wrote, "Those who orchestrated and believe that normalizing ties, including diplomatic and economic, between unelected Arabian oligarchies and the Zionist regime would marginalize, if not eliminate, Palestinian resistance, have been rudely awakened in Qatar." Michel Plitnik in Mondo Ways captures it well. "The World Cup has pierced the illusion that the Abraham Accords are anything more than agreements between an apartheid state and brutal dictatorships." Plitnik describes it as an agreement brokered by Donald Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, that normalized relations between the Zionist regime and the UAE, Bahrain, and in a more qualified fashion, Sudan. "The accords represent the idea that Israel can find normal relations with the Arab world, and especially the wealthy Persian Gulf autocracies led by Saudi Arabia, without dismantling their apartheid system or recognizing the human, civil, and national rights of Palestinians at all." The euphoria and ecstatic display of Palestinian flags, freedom songs, and enthusiastic chants among waves upon waves of football fans in Qatar is not only historic, but signifies the rejection of normalization. Though it appears to be confined to the World Cup, it certainly echoes solidarity with Hamas, Islamic Jihad, the formation of the Jenin Brigades, and all other resistance groups, including the courageous Lion's Den in Nablus. علي حبه جنة وسيم النار والجنة وسي المصطفى حقا إمام الناس والجنة. The Gate of Knowledge.
exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons, letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين. Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I welcome you all to this episode of The Gate of Knowledge, where we are discussing about the topic of prophethood based on the teachings of Imam Ali alayhi salam in Nahjul Balagha. And we are currently focusing on the first and second sermons in Nahjul Balagha, where Imam Ali alayhi salam explains about the grounds in which, or as a result of which, the prophethood, the phenomenon of prophethood occurred in the societies, and how prophets came and why they came to the communities. And in the previous session, we discussed about the fact that the most important needs that a community has are those spiritual and the intellectual needs. Those needs that kind of remove a community from the confusion that they are facing. The actual, you can say, thought processes that remove them from a state of confusion. And we give examples that any movement that takes up the role and takes up the duty to remove confusion from the societies and to introduce the true nature of spirituality to the communities will be doing something divine and prophetic. And on that same course, we say that the movement of the Islamic Revolution of Iran is actually a continuation of a prophetic movement. And our claim is quite correct, based on the fact that the very important elements of a prophetic and divine movement are manifested in this particular revolution of Iran, whereby the primary goal, the primary slogan of the movement that was started by Imam Khomeini, rahmatullahi alayh, was the issue of alleviating the spiritual poverty and the intellectual captivity that was faced by the people of that time, and of the Iranian people at that time. And we actually see the fruits of that movement today, and therefore we can safely claim that as long as those ideals are upheld by the people of Iran, and inshallah they will be upheld, this revolution will continue and will outgrow every other movement that exists in the world.
You are listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Welcome back, dear listeners, to IRIB English Radio. We are discussing about the discussion of prophethood, and we gave the example of the movement of Iran and how it is a prophetic movement. It's a divine movement based on divine principles that have been revealed to the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam. Coming back to the sermons that we were discussing of Nahjul Balagha, we said that the major problem that existed, that depravity that was facing the communities at that time, was that issue of intellectual and spiritual thirst, hunger, depravity, poverty, or whatever you call. And this was something that was the reason why the messengers came. They came to save the communities from all of these maladies that the communities were facing at that time. And if you look at the beauty with which Imam Ali alayhi salam describes that situation, a very dark, a very stark, starkly dark and melancholic environment that overwhelmed the society at that time was, if you just read through history and read about that particular, juncture in history, it will cause you to kind of have very unfortunate and dark feelings in your heart just by reading about it. But you see how beautifully Imam Ali alayhi salam uses the best form of words and the best forms of sentences to describe that situation, that it gives you that feeling of, you know, of kind of having that valor and that energy to change that situation, and to kind of, he brings forth those words to then introduce the issue of prophethood. So it is a very beautiful statement, and you know, for us to come and explain that in words, it's kind of difficult, because then we will have to be, it will create a very, you can say, hopeless and dark atmosphere. But yes, the reality was that, the reality of the communities at that time. So we need to face those realities and try to, inshallah, use the terms that Imam Ali alayhi salam mentions to kind of understand the solutions for those problems.
Stay tuned to the IRIB English Radio.
Now, Imam Ali alayhi salam talks about the main problem at that time was what we called fitan. وَالنَّاسُ فِي fitan. They were in a state of fitna. And we have mentioned the idea of fitna, but I would like to explain more. The major fitna, the actual, you can say, test or the actual problem that the people were facing at that time, which we called fitna, is a state of confusion, is a state of being enchanted or enticed, or you can say maybe a state of infatuation to negative things. But mostly it's a mixture of confusion, allurement, enchantment, and infatuation, whereby a person is now not able to think properly. And in that state of confusion, now a person can't see the way. This was the actual problem that the people are facing. Now, if a community, if a leader, or if a reformer comes and changes the political system or creates some social or humanitarian, you can say, reform in a society, but does not solve the original problem of confusion and, that state of being enchanted and being unable to think in a proper manner, then know that this community will continue in its downward trend of destruction. So, what we want to claim is a very important sociological, socio-political claim, and that is that, brothers and sisters, the answer to the problems is to solve those actual issues that, inshallah, we shall explain more in the coming sessions. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome, on the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio.
قال النبي محمد من كنت مولاه هذا علي سيد فاز من ولاه هو بالكتاب مسدد والنور معنا باب العلوم ومرشد هو آيات الله من نداه أو لبه حين دعاه نال مناه هو في الشدائد مجيد والفضل يمنى هو في المحاسن أحمد والوحي ربا.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight. Belgian police have made six arrests and seized mobile phones, computers and €600,000 in cash in connection with a corruption scandal at the European Parliament. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Euronews has covered this story and gives us more details. Four people have been charged in connection with an anti-corruption investigation into the European Parliament that has sent shockwaves throughout Brussels. European Parliament Vice President Eva Kaili and three others were charged and imprisoned on Sunday, 11th of December in Belgium amid a police probe into alleged corruption linked with Qatar. Six people have been arrested since Friday, 9th of December, in Brussels, after investigators made multiple raids based on suspicions of substantial money payments by the Persian Gulf state of Qatar to influence members of the European Parliament, MEPs. Eva Kaili, a Greek socialist MEP and one of 14 vice presidents at the European Legislative Body, was charged with corruption. She has been suspended from her party and sanctioned, being withdrawn from duties such as representing the head of the parliament in the Middle East. The Belgian Federal Prosecutor's Office did not name the country, but a source close to the issue confirmed to Agence France-Presse that it was Qatar, which other media outlets have also reported. This is not an isolated incident, said Transparency International. For several decades, the European Parliament has allowed a culture of impunity to develop and a total absence of independent ethical control. The other three individuals who have been charged remain unnamed, but according to an Associated Press report, one of them is an EU lawmaker. A spokesperson for Roberta Metsola, President of the European Parliament, announced on Saturday evening, 10th of December, in the light of the ongoing judicial investigations carried out by the Belgian authorities, President Metsola has decided to suspend with immediate effect all the powers, duties and tasks that have been delegated to Eva Kaili in her capacity as Vice President of the European Parliament. Earlier in the day, she said that EU legislator stands firmly against corruption and that we'll do all we can to assist the course of justice. The allegations come at a sensitive time for Qatar as it hosts the World Cup. The Persian Gulf state has already had to battle against claims around alleged human rights abuses of migrant workers. Any allegation of misconduct on the part of the state of Qatar testifies to serious misinformation, a Qatari government official told Agence France-Presse on Saturday. Hearings of the suspects were ongoing in Brussels over the weekend, according to a spokesperson for the Federal Prosecutor's Office. Two of the six people arrested have been released. Prosecutors said the investigation by Belgian judge Michel Claes is looking into corruption and money laundering within an organised gang. Eva Kaili, formerly a news anchor, was suspended from the Socialists and Democrats in the European Parliament with immediate effect on Friday 9th of December, according to a statement shared by the group. On Saturday, 10th of December, the Belgian newspaper L'Echo claimed that several bags full of banknotes were disclosed at her Brussels home. Police searched Eva Kaili's house after allegedly finding her father in possession of a large amount of cash in a suitcase. In November, the EU lawmaker went to Qatar where she welcomed reforms in the Persian Gulf state. Qatar is a leader in terms of labour rights, she said afterwards at the podium of the European Parliament, sparking a fierce backlash from other MEPs. An additional house search of another socialist MEP, Belgian Marc Tarabella, took place on Saturday evening. EU legislator will open on Monday in what promises to be a fiery session. French socialists have lambasted the very serious scandal with MEP Manon Aubry demanding a debate on the issue and criticising aggressive lobbying by Qatar. The British newspaper The Financial Times has also covered the same story. The European Parliament is at the centre of a spreading corruption scandal after Belgian police seized €600,000 in cash and detained two members of the European Parliament as part of an international investigation into claims that Football World Cup host Qatar sought to buy influence. A Belgian judge charged four unnamed people on Sunday with participation in a criminal organisation, money laundering and corruption, following multiple arrests and house searches over the weekend, including the homes of two members of European Parliament and a former MEP's family in Italy. The charges against the members of the European Parliament MEPs have already triggered resignations and the suspension of a parliamentary vote on granting Qatari nationals visa-free travel to the European bloc, due next week. Parliamentarians have voiced shock at the arrest of the four people and of the related detention of family members of a former Italian member of European Parliament, who were allegedly offered a holiday worth €100,000 by the Qataris. Campaigners have lambasted the Parliament's culture of immunity. The allegations come as Qatar is at the centre of world attention, with the World Cup semi-finals and the final to be played over the next week. The matches are the culmination of a tournament the Persian Gulf state has long sought, but which has brought unprecedented scrutiny. Belgium's Federal Prosecutor's Office said it suspected that third parties in political and or strategic positions within the European Parliament were paid large sums of money or offered substantial gifts to influence Parliament's decision. Prosecutors had previously said Belgian police investigators suspected a Persian Gulf country of seeking to sway the European Parliament. While Belgian authorities have not named the suspects, Eva Kaili, a vice president of the European Parliament, has been stripped of all her duties in the legislature, as well as her membership in the PASOK political party, the Greek Socialist Party. Eva Kaili, a former television news presenter, defended Qatar's human rights record last month in the European Parliament, hailing the country as a front-runner in labour rights for its decision to scrap a migrant workers' sponsorship system. She alleged that other MEPs were seeking to discriminate against Qatar and accuse everyone that talks to them of engaging in corruption, but still they take their gas. Eva Kaili did not immediately respond to a request for comment. Italian prosecutors added that Antonio Panzeri, president of a Brussels-based non-governmental organisation and a former member of the European Parliament, had been detained in the Belgian capital Brussels, while his wife and daughter had been held in Bergamo, Italy, on the basis of a European arrest warrant. Both the Italian women deny the allegations, according to their lawyer. Several former leading European Union officials, including Federica Mogherini, previously the European bloc's foreign policy chief, and France's former Prime Minister Bernard Cazeneuve, subsequently quit as honorary board members of Antonio Panzeri's non-governmental organization Fight Impunity.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program Hadith of the Day here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we are going to be looking at a very beautiful and noble hadith which has been narrated from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. This hadith is about people who believe in determinism or predestination. Here this refers to the idea that, the actions which we believe emanate from a person don't really emanate from the person. Rather, they emanate from God. The person is simply a recipient, a receptacle upon which God, from which God manifests these actions. And actions themselves are actions of God. This is an incorrect notion. It is contrary to the belief in the justice of God. And therefore, it's incorrect. Harsh words have been stated, and have been passed down to us from our Imma alayhi salam regarding people who believe in such an incorrect notion. If we don't say that these people are they fall under the category of disbelievers legally, at least from a theoretical point of view, in theory at least, these people. Right, they can be equated with these disbelievers, which we can clearly gather from the following hadith that we wish to recite for our esteemed listeners here today. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam said, "He who claims that Allah coerces his servants to disobey him or burdens them with that which they cannot endure." These are the people who believe in determinism, believe in predestination. How should we deal with these people? The Imam says, "You must not eat from an animal that he has slaughtered, nor should you believe in his testimony, nor pray behind him, nor give him any part of your arms, your charity." These are very harsh words, and these are the ways that we deal with disbelievers, right? We deal with people who are, openly commit transgressions, right? So this is a very harsh reaction, to such people and to the adherence of, such a belief. And, the reason for this is, like we said, that people who believe in such a thing, first of all, they disbelieve in God's justice, right? Because the belief in determinism, it necessitates the negation of God's justice. Secondly, the propagation of such a belief in society, its natural consequence is that people will begin to commit sins. Right, because they will say that, "I'm not committing the sin; it's God who is committing it on my behalf." Right, and the proliferation and propagation of such a belief in society, it leads to the amplification of sins and crimes in society, and that's why this is such a grave and dangerous belief. Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at the proponents of determinism and how they should be treated in the words of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English.